In this next session, we're going to come in and take a look at sort of dev test scenarios around Visual Studio and Windows Azure. We're not here to talk about unit testing. In fact, you know, earlier I said, oh, we're all used to doing unit testing now. And I'll admit, I'm a presenter primarily. Most of the code I write is demo code. I don't write a lot of unit tests, right? So, yeah, I know you should do it. But usually the code I'm writing is going to live for a week and then move on, right? So I'm certainly not here to preach to you about unit testing, although we certainly have rich tools for that built into Visual Studio. What we're really more interested in is thinking about as you get into, you know, heavier testing environments, where maybe you have test rigs or load testing or things like that that you need to do on a repeated basis or as part of builds and all that kind of stuff. Sort of how do we look at leveraging, you know, Azure maybe to offload some of those requirements, or how do we look at the support for TFS and you know, source control integration, continuous deployment, and all that good stuff between Visual Studio and Azure. So some of the current testing challenges that a lot of shops have is they don't have any testing environment at all. Right? They may be doing unit testing at the dev level, or they may not be doing unit testing at the dev level. They don't really have a good idea of how well their code is being tested, or if they don't have, you know, ongoing tests as part of their build process, or all that kind of stuff. Testing in production is both a problem, but also often the norm of the way that we find out about a problem in our application is that something broke when we ran it, right? And so having to go back and figuring out how do we deal with those better. You do have a test platform, but it's maybe out of date, or your tests aren't up to date. Maybe you have tests that you haven't updated in a while, and they're not really testing current functionality. The test platform's maybe a little too simplistic. We're not doing load or stress testing. IT may not be able to react as quickly as our application needs grow, as we need to add in new nodes or things like that. We may be having a problem, you know, provisioning the test environment. So the cloud helps us solve some of those problems, right? They give us the speed of being able to go in and provision. You saw me set up a VM in a couple of minutes, right? Now, in fact, the one that I set up was just a Windows server. So if there was anything else I needed, I had to RDP into it and then go install additional product or whatever. But if you're an MSDN subscriber, there were images that already had Visual Studio in it that, in fact, had ultimate level that you could go in and had testing tools already installed and ready to go for you, right? So within minutes, you could have a testing environment ready to go. You can also scale those out. You could create an image for a test node and then be able to, through script, provision multiple nodes of those and again, have multiple test machines up and running very quickly. And because I only need to run them while the test is running, I can turn around and just as quickly script or automate the shutting down, and not only shutting down, but destruction of those VMs if I want to, right? So we get a lot of economy out of that. I don't have to go out and have persistent VHDs or VMs or physical machines or whatever to run these tests on. So that was a question that came up in the room here during the break, but it was around the automation of these things. I'll come back and talk about it here as well. But earlier I mentioned that on the download page of the Windows Azure portal itself, or Windows Azure site, there's the command line interfaces. So there's PowerShell scripts as well as the cross-platform command line interface, which is basically Node.js scripts that you can use to automate a large number of tasks in the Azure platform, and those continue to grow. They're constantly releasing updated version of those command line tools to support more and more functionality. So you can script the creation of VMs off of an existing image. You can add them into existing cloud services, add them into availability sets, add them into virtual networks, domain join them, a whole bunch of really cool stuff that you can do just through automation. And think about building those into your build scripts so that as a build happens, I can run these scripts, spin up my test machines, run the tests, and when I'm done, shut down those test machines or delete them altogether. Another big part of that economic piece is that with virtual machines, this isn't true with web roles and worker roles, we deploy them differently and they get managed a little bit differently, but with IaaS virtual machines, when you shut them down and they're stopped, they get deallocated and you're no longer being billed for them, at least from a compute perspective. You're still paying for the storage of the VHDs, but as we saw, that can be relatively inexpensive, but the compute cost goes away. Remember that the single four-core VM model, the majority of that cost was around the compute of that. So you can significantly reduce the cost. If you don't want the VHDs at all, then you can delete the VMs and the VHDs associated with them. And again, that can all be scripted into your build scripts. So that's really cool, right? So the idea here is that as we go into Azure, right, we have the abilities for both developers to be able to go in and provision virtual machines and all that kind of stuff up in the cloud, as well as to interact with our IT admins who can help us sort of automate those routines, build us PowerShell scripts and all that kind of stuff. This is, DevTest is probably one of the more popular uses of the cloud in general. And there's a number of customers out there that are doing it. Some of you may be already doing it yourself, so I won't talk through these, but there's links on the slides there that you can go read case studies about these customers and sort of what they're doing from a dev test scenario. And if you look at sort of the overall infrastructure of sort of maybe how you might look at this, we've got dev test and lab environments, we have application services like storage and SQL database and mobile services and all that kind of stuff. We have the ability to interact with those both from applications running on premise as well as applications running on devices or applications running on other platforms. From an IT manager, actually I think I will mention one thing up there, that bar across the top, System Center. Right, so in a Microsoft environment, System Center is sort of the management tool that IT pros can use to manage resources across the enterprise, and that includes now not only their private resources on premise, but also Azure-based resources up there as well. Right, so it's, as the slide says, it gives me this single pane of glass, right? This single management tool that we can use to manage resources throughout the enterprise as well as up into Azure. I also talked earlier about MSDN, right? So if you are an MSDN subscriber and you've come by it through just a regular MSDN subscription with your organization or personally, you get an Azure benefit with that. And depending on your MSDN subscription level, if you are a Visual Studio Pro or a Visual Studio Test Professional, you get $50 worth of usage in Azure a month as part of that Azure benefit. Right now, by default, those MSDN subscriptions have a spending limit on them. So if you go over the $50 within the current billing period, those resources will be blocked, and you can't use them again until the next billing period. But that's preventing you from getting a bill that you didn't expect, right? And it's letting you know, hey, your usage is above your benefit level there. If you want to remove that spending limit, you can, but you'll be billed for any usage above that limit. If you're a premium subscriber, you get $100 a month of usage, and ultimate subscribers get $150 worth of usage a month as part of their Azure MSDN benefit, right? And again, those have hard spending limits on them unless you remove them. There's also pre-configured virtual machines, as we saw in that gallery, with SQL Server, BizTalk, SharePoint, a whole bunch of other cool stuff in there. And as MSDN subscribers, there's the Visual Studio 2013 virtual machine images in there as well. A question came up during the break about licensing for the virtual machines. So if you deploy a virtual machine that has SQL Server in it, the license cost of SQL Server is included in the execution cost of the virtual machine itself, right? So you're paying for the SQL Server cost as part of the execution or compute costs. If you are a volume license agreement or a volume license customer, you can go through an agreement process with Azure, and you'll do that through your subscription, where we support what's called license portability, and you can use your on-premise SQL licenses for instances that are running up in the cloud, and then run them at just regular VM costs up there. MSDN subscribers, though, also get discounted rates on those execution costs, right? So as you go in there and look at the pricing plans for MSDN, you'll see a reduction in price for MSDN subscribers. So this is great for dev test, right? Especially as you think about automation around that. Being able to spin up a VM, run some stuff in it really quick, shut it back down, and you may have had that VM running only for a few minutes, or 10, 15, 20 minutes, an hour, depending on however long your test process took to get through that. You're only paying for the time that you use it, right? So we don't bill you a whole hour. All right, if you run it for a few minutes, we bill you for a few minutes. So that's great. You can spin them up, run some stuff on them. When you're done, shut them down, and they're deallocated at that point, and you're no longer being billed for the compute costs. So traditional IT problems around dev test and that kind of stuff is, you know, how do we integrate with our existing environments? How do we deal with, you know, complex IT infrastructures where maybe we have a mixture of Windows and Linux or whatever that happens to be? How do we deal with security and compliance? There's documentation on pretty much all of these things. For the security and compliance issue, you can go to the Windows Azure Trust Center, and there's a fair amount of documentation on what our current levels of compliance are for certain things, as well as what the efforts are. So getting started with virtual machines, we actually kind of talked about this already a little bit, but remember that we do have images for certainly Microsoft-supported platforms, as well as a number of other open source and Linux platforms out there as well. And you can create these. You saw me going to create them through the management portal. You can also script these through PowerShell or through that cross-platform command line interface. And then also, as I said, this is all supported through a RESTful API. So the PowerShell scripts and the Node.js scripts are just written to call into the RESTful API for you so that you don't have to go do it, right? But you can come in and, pardon me, call into that RESTful API yourself if you prefer to. It's fully documented. You can find out about that. Now, let me actually jump back over to my VM here. And if I navigate down to the virtual machines node, I can see the VMs that I'd created previously. But there's also this images tab. And the images tab will let you see any images that you've created. So you saw me at one point create an image off of that web, or a VM instance off that web node base image in that last presentation. But notice down here at the bottom, there's also Browse VM Depot. And so if I click on that, that's actually going to take me off to what's called the Virtual Machine Depot. And this is basically a collection of open source images. So these aren't Windows platforms, they're Linux platforms. But they can have pre-installed and pre-configured software. These can be uploaded by community members. And they're therefore not supported by Microsoft. But hey, if you wanted to go spin up a box that had Alfresco pre-installed, I have no idea what Alfresco is, but there it is. And you could spin up an image that already had that pre-installed for you. And you'll notice that there's actually a ton of different community images, et cetera, that are available out there. And actually, I did mean to check for one thing here. That was on IIS1. Okay. Sorry, that was my bad. All right, so how are some different ways that we can get virtual machine images up into Azure? We've seen that image gallery, right, where I basically went in, went through the portal, and was able to provision a new virtual machine off of an image in the gallery or off of an image that I'd pre-created. So that one's probably the quickest, assuming that one of the image gallery or templates is what you need, or at least you can easily customize it after the fact. Second option, we said, was to basically upload a VHD. This is going to be a lot more time consuming because we've got to get that large watermelon up the water hose, right? We've got to get that big VHD and ship it up into the Azure data center. But once you successfully do that, and remember there was the add Azure VHD PowerShell command line script that can help me do that and resume failed uploads and that kind of stuff should your connection go bad, which it seems to always do for me at home whenever I'm trying to upload a VHD. So it's nice that I can resume those. And then we just now added support for this third option of being able to stick your VHD onto a BitLocker encrypted drive and then ship that up to the Azure data center where you expect to host those VMs and then be able to run them there. And we talked about virtual machine portability. I can go in and create virtual machines on premise and upload them into the cloud. Or, you know, I don't think I mentioned it, but yes, you can download VHDs for virtual machines that you have running in the cloud and put them back on Hyper-V on premise. Sure, I mean, so you can ship up and you can ship them back down as well. You also can extend your infrastructure, right? So if I have, for example, services running up in Azure, I can put them onto a virtual network and then basically allow that virtual network to connect into my on-premise network through this virtual private network thing, through a Cisco firewall or whatever, standard endpoints, and basically be able to connect to those resources in the cloud or have resources in the cloud connect to resources on premise. We were talking about that during the network or during the break as well, that it's through connections like that that I could support Active Directory domain synchronization with AD domain controllers running in virtual machines inside a cloud service, or I could have virtual machines running in a cloud service that are domain joined back to on-premise. I could have applications running in the cloud that are consuming database data off of SQL Server instances running on-premise or whatever, right? So a lot of different types of scenarios that you can imagine by doing that. And I did mention being able to use PowerShell for automation. So, in fact, if I jump back over to my VM here. Just go to windowsazure.com. And then from the downloads link, under command line tools, you'll notice that I have Windows Azure PowerShell, and then I also have this cross-platform command line interface. And this is basically just a bunch of Node scripts and things like that that you can run. We also have Mac and Linux command line tools that you can run as well. And so I've already downloaded and installed the PowerShell ones. And if I go back to my start menu, when you do that, you'll notice that I get this Windows Azure PowerShell shortcut that I can run. And that's just a regular PowerShell window, but that already has the Azure modules imported into it. And so I've got that guy ready to go over here. Or actually, I dropped him onto my taskbar as well down here. And I've got it set up to run as administrator just in case I have any local admin issues. But I can come in here and type in help Azure. And here's all the different Azure-related commands that I can perform in here. So we can add Azure disks and add Azure VHDs, add Azure virtual machine images, create accounts, getting accounts. So we can create things, we can get things, we can remove things, et cetera, set settings, a whole bunch of cool stuff that we can do, all from these command line tools right inside a PowerShell script. And I apologize, I'd swear, so I was looking for my folder down there and I'm not seeing it. I had a script and I'm not finding the script right now, I should have looked for it on the break, that basically does exactly that, goes in and provisions some VMs. Remember my IIS1 and IIS2? Just adds additional web nodes into that farm for me. So these are documented, you'll find a number of tutorials out there. Again, I thought I had the script right there on my drive, I apparently don't. So it must be on some other VM I've logged into somewhere at some point sometime. So my apologies for that. But yeah, you can fully script these guys and get them in there. Sorry, back up here. Well, this actually goes back to other types of workloads that you can support in those virtual machines. SharePoint, you know, we talked about that. If you're a SharePoint shop or if you need to do SharePoint dev, it's great to be able to go in and spin up some SharePoint stuff that you can play around coding with and not worry about, you know, hitting your own SharePoint sites or that kind of stuff. And then we have SharePoint virtual machines that you can consume. Not my deck there, sorry. Provisioning through the VMs, or provisioning VMs you can do through the portal or through script. You can develop against those guys just using Visual Studio. One of the problems you have with virtual machines is how are you gonna get your code out of Visual Studio into the VM, right? And so you could use source control. Again, TFS or Git or whatever your source control repository of choice is. I still have that problem of needing to install my source control client into the VM to be able to get that source code down. I showed you that my IIS box, I'd wired up for web deploy. So I configured that to be able to do web deploy directly into my IIS box. And so that works. You could also, of course, just use good old FTP and open up the ports and all that kind of stuff, or copy and paste. There's a number of different ways that you can think about deploying your code up into a VM. With web roles and worker roles, it gets a little bit nicer because the deployment models built into the idea of a cloud service, we write the code locally and we package it and we ship it to Azure. and Azure goes and does the deployment for me. So that platform as a service simplifies the deployment story for you. You don't have to think about how to get the code into your virtual machines. The platform takes care of that for you. Same thing with websites. I can publish directly into websites or have websites even automatically synchronize with my source control out there. So imagining yourself as sort of a shop out here, I've got my local servers, maybe I'm Tailspin over here. I've got local boxes, my local dev machines and all that kind of stuff versus up here in Azure. Certainly we can do site-to-site VPN connectivity, and that's going to let you have direct connection from your virtual machines on site, your dev machines on site up into the virtual machine resources that you have running up in Azure. And that's not going through the public endpoints. Right, so I'm not, for example, with SQL Server, I'm not having to expose SQL Server publicly with these VPN or virtual private networks that we can create. So that's really cool. You can, of course, set up source control. And again, I showed you that we support, from like a website perspective, TFS, Git, GitHub, Dropbox, Bitbucket, CodePlex, a number of source control repositories that you can use. Question came up during the break here in the room. TFS, we have a hosted version of TFS as well as on-prem. You can use Git as the source control storage rather than TFS's own traditional source control repository, but still have it be managed by TFS. Right? So Git as your source control is one of the choices that you have with that. Or, of course, a regular hosted Git repository like GitHub or Bitbucket or something like that would work as well out there. As a dev, I can go in and provision my own development workstations or test infrastructure machines. We can, of course, have automated scripts for running build and test and that kind of stuff up there. Load testing, et cetera, could all be running inside virtual machines, inside Azure, et cetera. So, and that gives us a lot of choices to think about how is it we can interact with resources running up inside Azure. I did talk about multiple subscriptions earlier. This is, in fact, the exact same slide. That's the other key thing is remember that you don't have to let everybody into one bucket, right? You have this opportunity to have each dev with their own MSDN subscription, and because it's part of the MSDN subscription, there's not an additional cost for that. Have a separate account for QA, a separate account for production, et cetera. And those are going to keep the credentials that are used to access those different subscriptions completely isolated. You don't run into that accidental, oops, did I just deploy to production? I didn't mean to do that, right? And it helps keep those separate as well as building separate, et cetera. But we can still use source control as sort of a pipeline to be able to move code through those different subscriptions. Load testing, this is great. If you have a site, the app could even be on-premise or it could be running in Azure. I really don't care where the app is. I just want to be able to load test it. And with something like Azure, I could go in and spin up a virtual machine and say, let's test how it's going to support customers from Europe or something. Spin up a VM that has a load test script to run against it, and then I could just run that and let that guy push, you know, my on-premise site. Or I could even then start to automate the spinning up of VMs across multiple regions and letting them all come in and generate traffic against my website and pull back, you know, real sort of load testing results and give me a real idea of what I'm looking at. All right. Disposable deployments. I talked about being able to spin up a VM and then shut it right back down or even delete it. Websites are the same way. So each subscription actually gets 10 free websites, and that's even perpetually. So if you just signed up for a free trial and you go in and create a free website, even after your trial expires, the website is still perpetually free. So every subscription, 10 free websites, and also 10 free mobile services that you can use at the free usage tier. If you step up above free usage, then you have to start the billing process for those. But you can spin up a website, deploy to it, test against it, and then just shut the website down and delete it, right, and move on again. And again, that's something that you can script and automate quite simply. So let me jump back over here and get into Visual Studio. And first of all, with that there, I'm going to go open up another Windows box. And this was not wanting to come up for me quickly earlier. Let's just test this. I'm going to close these other windows up here really quick. Sorry, I'm being quiet. I'm doing this with my fingers crossed. I was testing this morning, and it wasn't wanting to agree with me, so hopefully this will pull up. Oh, okay, good. All right. So this is basically our hosted TFS solution. It's available under visualstudio.com. You can go sign up for a free account, and with your free account, you can create team projects for teams of 5 members or less for free. All right, and again, that's perpetually free. If you need to have more than 5 members in a team project, then you have to step up and pay for the additional members, or they have to have MSDN subscriptions that they can use their MSDN benefit to gain access to those 4. All right. And so with hosted TFS, we save you the trouble of having to go and install TFS on site and maintain those TFS repositories and databases and sites and all that kind of stuff yourself. Right. We also give you a build platform and a test platform that you can leverage through here as well. Right. So that's really cool. So you'll notice that I actually have a number of projects, et cetera, down here that I've got. I can come in and create a new project. And I'll call this, you know, my BS Dev Camp Demo or something like that. We've got some different process templates that are available to you down here, so Agile, Scrum, and a more formal process out there as well. And that's really more about how do you want to manage the development process, right? So TFS is much more than just source control, right? I admit I was a big source safe user for a long time. I know you're not supposed to admit that, right? But it was check-in and check-out, right? Really, for the majority of my professional career, I've been an independent developer. Right, so I was always on a team of one, right? And so check-in and check-out for me was just a way to cover my assets, right? To make sure that if I had to roll back, I had it. It was a way to sort of have a backup-ish kind of copy of my code out there. I moved on to SVN for a while. But really, from source control, for a team of one, I'm looking for check-in and check-out, basic versioning, and that kind of stuff, right? But TFS also gives me a way to sort of manage the overall project. Right, to deal with what are the things that have to be done? What are we working on for this sprint, you know, of an application development cycle or something like that? And so that's where that process template comes in, is how do you want to manage your project, not just how do you want to check in and check out your source control? And so that's where this second checkbox comes in, is or drop down of how do you want to handle source control, right? TFS, or we have this distributed source control Git as an option. And so in this case, you have TFS acting as the Git repository that you could then go out and clone onto other nodes, and you've got all your standard sort of Git concepts around that. I'll leave it at TFS, because I don't get Git quite. I get Git basically. I got to get Git somehow, but I haven't got Git yet. Get it? Sorry, I'll shut up. All right, so it's going out and provisioning this team project, right? So a team project is really this umbrella over all of these work items and bug tracking and all that other kind of stuff that I have going on relative to the multiple Visual Studio projects that could exist within this single team project, right? So a team project can have multiple Visual Studio projects saved in its source control. But I'll go ahead and close out of this then. And if I go back over to Visual Studio, I've actually got a Rewire Studio here as well. Let me sign out. I'm signing with a demo account. And let me go ahead and sign out of here, if it will. You're going to let me sign out there? Actually, can I? Let's try this. I was hoping that was going to break that. parameters. There we go. That'll get me there. That's what I'm looking for. All right. So you'll notice Visual Studio now also lets you sign in with your Live ID or Microsoft account. The benefit of that is that you can now basically have roaming settings across Visual Studio. So I can go in and set my preferences, maybe when I'm working at home, and automatically the next time I start up Visual Studio at work, it'll resync back up to my preferences, and I get all those settings. If you watch the Visual Studio launch, there was a demo where someone had had two copies of Studio open at the same time, made a change in one, and it was just, boom, automatically reflected in the other, right? So we get that benefit of not having to have all these different configurations going on out there, and that's great. But so over here, then, I can come in and connect up to my Team server. And there's that. In fact, this is a brand new machine. I haven't even ever connected. Notice that it already remembers my Team servers, and that's through those roaming profiles of Visual Studio there. But it was this brettstatum.visualstudio.com, and up there I should be able to see my new BS DevCamp demo team project that you just saw me connect, right? So I can go ahead and connect up to that and configure my workspace here to get my mappings. I'm going to let that go ahead and go down to TFS, something a little bit shorter. Map and get. All right. So now down here on my C drive, I should have this TFS folder, and then I've got this BS DevCamp demo, and I've got build process templates and things like that down there. That's really cool. I didn't have to go and install TFS, and boom, I've got this TFS project sitting out there and ready to go. All right, so now I can come back in, and let's go to websites. WindowsAzure.com. And I'll jump into my websites here. And there's that earlier, actually, I didn't make one earlier, did I? I deleted it, that's right. The BSS demo I deleted, okay. So we'll come in here and make a new website. And I'm just gonna quick create this, and I'll call it my bsdevcampdemo.azurewebsites.net. The name does not have to be the same as my team project. This just helps me keep everything neat in my brain, right, as I talk through it. But so it's gonna be bsdevcampdemo.azurewebsites.net, and we'll stick it out here in West US and create that website. And again, remember, this didn't take too long to create, so we'll wait for it here. Good, already done. And so now I can navigate into the management portal for that guy and actually set up deployment from source control. Cool? So I'm gonna click onto that, say I wanna connect up to Visual Studio Online. Go on to next, and to my visualstudio.com name, which was brettstatum.visualstudio.com, and authorize now. And that's basically going to go take me over to an OAuth page and give visualstudio.com a way to say, hey, Brett, do you really want to let this website have access to your team projects over here? And I'm going to say yes, accept that, and allow that to happen. And now the website can say, cool, we're in. I can go check out what you've got in your TFS repositories. And I can say, I want you to sync up with that BS DevCamp demo for me. Pretty cool? Now, I don't have any websites yet. I haven't put any projects in there yet. So we'll go ahead and OK on that. And so it's now going in and linking my website up to that team project that I just created. All right. And since I'm already tied into TFS down here, this used to be Web Matrix. But since I'm tied into TFS, this icon down here says, hey, you want to just go open this up in, Okay, I think it was still thinking there. Sorry, it was still thinking down there. Open this up in Visual Studio, and it's basically just going to go start Visual Studio up for me. And have me already set up in there. And so now I'm going to come in and set up a new project. Now this is a Visual Studio project, not to be confused with a Team Services project. Right? Team Services projects represent work item tracking and a process template and a source control repository. in that source control repository, you could create any number of nodes of source control, including Visual Studio projects, if you wanted to, or solutions, right? So I'm gonna go in and create a web project, and I'm gonna add this into, actually I'll navigate out to my TFS folder. BS Dev Camp Demo, that's gonna be the root of my solution here, and we'll call this guy BS Dev Camp Demo Web. Cool. And add that into source control. Cool. And I'll do just a simple, actually, I'll do a web forms. Have you guys seen this yet? If you're a web dev in Visual Studio 2013, you might have noticed that I had a single ASP.NET website project. And then it said, well, what kind of ASP.NET project, right? And it's this whole idea of one ASP.NET. You know, web forms, MVC, web API, it's all good, right? And you can mix and match them all in a single project. You could have web form pages alongside, you know, your MVC controllers and views and all that good stuff, all right? So you can mix and match these. So I'm saying, hey, look, I think I'm just going to do web forms, so just give me web form support. But you could add in this other stuff as well, including a unit test project. And I've already been honest about my unit testing history. But I'm going to go ahead and just say, okay. Pulling in all the NuGet packages. All right. Cool. So in my Solution Explorer, here's this web form site that I had it going to create for me. And I could go ahead and debug this locally, just run it inside Internet Explorer. That's going to spin up IIS Express for me, deploy the website to it, and I could see it running here locally just to verify that it works. There it is, beautiful site, right? Okay, so that all looks good, and I've worked on this website for hours. I have it looking perfect. This is exactly what I wanted, right? So let's check it in, right? So I can come up here to my solution up here, and I could go into check in. First version of the website. And do my check-in. Now remember, that's going and checking into TFS, which is actually up in visualstudio.com, right? So this is sort of a cloud version of TFS, if you will. So it's gonna go through that, doing the upload there, getting it all checked in. But something else that happened when I did that integration with between my website and TFS was, not work items, sorry, was that a build definition for this CD, BS Dev Camp Demo underscore CD, CD being for continuous deployment, right? And so that build definition got built, and if I jump back up to my website and go to the deployments tab, give it a second here. That build should be queued. Let's come back over here as well. Browse. Okay. Over here, I can see that I've got this build definition queued. So it's seen the check-in. And so with the continuous deployment, it's basically set up that whenever a check-in occurs, it's going to go in and do the build and deploy automatically right up to my Azure website for me. So it got queued. I'm just waiting for it to kick off, and it's going at demo speed. You know, they always run slower when you're showing somebody else. So anyhow, we'll give that a little bit of time here to finish up. Yeah, still queuing up there. So let me go see if Azure website sees it yet. No, not yet. Okay, there we go. So I do see that deployment now coming. And it's the individual continuous integration coming up here versus the ID, the check-in ID that was in there. So that guy will chug away for a little bit. And when that's done, we'll come back and check the deployment out. So meanwhile, back at the farm, let me go back to Visual Studio again. Yeah, this was the original one that I had. Okay. And let me go spin up another project. And I'm sorry, back up here to web again. Let's just do, we'll do an MVC one this time. All right, now I'm just going to stick this in a demo folder. MVC web app demo, some nice creative name. Not going to worry about adding this guy into source control. Yes, you could. I'm not. I'm going to go ahead and say OK. And we'll do, I said I would do MVC, right? So we'll OK. All right, so here's my MVC application. You'll notice that over here, there's a window in Visual Studio called the Server Explorer. And you can always get it if you just go up to View, Server Explorer. If you're one of the Express editions of Visual Studio, that'll actually say, I think, Database Explorer, not Server Explorer. But in there is gonna be this Windows Azure node. And if I expand that, I can actually see through my subscriptions all the different resources that are available up in Azure. Cloud services, virtual machines, websites, et cetera. And notice as I expand this, it's actually going up and querying Azure and pulling back a list of them all. So there's that BS Dev Camp demo site, et cetera. And so I can kind of see what's going on down here. I can add a new website right from here if I want to. Now that all actually happened when I was trying to sign out, you saw me do this, but notice there's this connect to Windows Azure. And so I've signed in as my Microsoft account, so I could just sign out, but all you have to do is right-click on there and sign in as the Microsoft account that you wanted to go talk to, and that's pretty cool, right? That was new with the Azure SDK 2.2. Prior to that, what you would do, and Visual Studio would help you do this, is download a management certificate from your Azure portal, and that certificate was used basically for authentication backup against Azure. You were basically permitting the tool to log in as you effectively to gain access. Here we're just saying, yeah, log me in. And it's much simpler now just being able to sign in with your Microsoft account and not mess with management certificates. But so that's pretty cool. If I jump back over to my Solution Explorer though, here's this website. And again, you could debug it locally and all that cool stuff. But when you say, hey, I'm ready to go, I want to push this up into Azure, I can simply right click on this guy and come down to publish. And in there, it says, well, hey, here's all the different publishing profiles this project knows about. I want to actually go in and import one. And it knows that I want to import a profile for an Azure website. So this is going to use web deploy. You could web deploy any number of places. But this one's saying, no, I specifically want to deploy into an Azure website. And it says, oh, OK, well, which Azure website do you want to publish into? Well, I could publish to any one of those there, and it would overwrite whatever was currently in them. I don't want to do that. I want to make a new one. So we'll call this the ad hoc site. And so it's actually going to use my credentials to go up and create a new a new website. I've got multiple subscriptions, so I'm going to tell it to use the one from the business group there. Put me in West US. I don't need a database for this guy, but you could actually have it go in and create a new server or connect up to an existing database or whatever here, right? And those are going to be Azure SQL databases, not SQL VM instances, but the hosted sort of SQL database type thing. I'm not going to worry about making one here. Go ahead and hit create. And so it's actually right now going up and provisioning a new site inside Windows Azure for me right now. So while that chugs away, let's jump back over to my portal. And I see that active deployment that was happening from Visual Studio completed successfully. And what was my site called? BS Dev Camp Demo, I think, right? Yeah, there we go. So let's go browse into that guy. And there it is. Cool. So that was the one I built locally, just a brand new project, checked in to TFS, and through the integration between websites and TFS, it just automatically deployed it for me. I didn't have to go deploy or anything. Pretty cool, right? And of course, that means if I go back and made a change and checked in again, it would just again deploy right back up into the site for me. So that's with a continuous deployment model. That's a little scary if you're not doing testing, right? So if you mix testing in with that, those tests can run as part of the build. Unit tests even. Should a unit test fail, the deployment won't occur, right? So at a minimum, put unit tests in here, right? And again, for time, I'm not going to do that. But yes, put unit tests in. You can put load tests in. The problem with the hosted TFS is that if you have special libraries or things like that outside of Visual Studio that you need for your tests, they're not going to be on our build servers. If there are things that you can include in your project, there's a way to point the build and say, by the way, here's the custom assemblies that you need for the build process. But if it's a whole separate install or something like that, you're not going to be able to do it in the hosted TFS, and that would be a reason that you need to go back to on-prem TFS instead. Okay, but otherwise, for basic unit testing, basic load testing, that kind of stuff, yes, you can do that with hosted TFS. And if those tests fail, the deployment won't occur, so you're not going to push bad code up into your production site. So that's really cool. But back over here, the other one that I had going was just deploying directly. So it made my brand new site for me. I can go ahead and say okay, and just walk through the rest of the wizard. I'm not going to change anything. Just publish. And so I get this little web publish activity tab inside Visual Studio. The output window also shows you what's happening, but it's already deployed. It's pulling up the site for me. And there you go. So that quickly, I was able to go from a brand new project in Visual Studio to publishing into a brand new website inside TFS. I'm sorry, inside Azure, right? Now, this is not how you're going to make your production sites. But as a dev, being able to spin a real public site up that quickly, and I can just as easily come back in and tear that thing down, right? I can go right back into the management portal and say delete. You saw me do that earlier. And that site was gone in seconds. Right, and it was gone. So it's really cool to be able to spin these up, use them as the target of test, use them as the target for validation. Hey, can you hit this and tell me if this is what you're looking for? You know, working with a customer or something like that, and then delete it, turn around, and move off. Right. So it's awesome to be able to have that kind of flexibility. Let me see here. The other one I wanted to show, and again, this is where I thought I had my script there, and I'm not seeing it, so my apologies. But let me jump back up into my portal. And in an earlier demo, you saw me, I already had IIS-1, and I provisioned this additional VM off of the same base image called IIS-2, right? And so if I go into cloud services, you'll notice that I have this web farm demo cloud service. And if I navigate into that web farm demo and go to the instances, I'll see that I have two virtual machine instances that are running in this same cloud service, right? So remember, the cloud service is this protective boundary around one or more virtual machine instances that run within it. I originally had just IIS-1, and then in the previous demo, I came in and provisioned a second virtual machine off the same base image and added it into the same cloud service. So I now basically have two copies of the exact same virtual machine running inside this cloud service over here. As it is right now, though, they're completely independent from each other, right? They just happen to be coincidentally made from the same base image. But there's no coordination between which traffic is going to come in and go to one or go to the other. If I go back to the dashboard page here, Where is my scale tab? You'll notice that I've created what's called an availability set. An availability set is a way that you can manually set up your own little web farm, right? I mentioned WebRoles earlier, and if I have time, I'll demo one really quick. But WebRoles are pre-configured Windows virtual machines that have IIS pre-installed, and you just deploy your code right into them. It's really easy. And the load balancing happens automatically. You just tell us, run five instances. Boom, we spin up five VMs, we load balance across them. If you're building your own VMs, though, it doesn't happen that easily. You have to tell us which nodes are identical and which nodes should be load balanced across and all that kind of stuff, right? So the way that you do that is through these availability sets. And so I've got this WebFarm AV set here. and it's got a current, currently just has one instance in it. See if it's going to navigate into that for me. It's not wanting to move here. Let me go here. Come on. There we go. Sorry. So I jumped into the IIS2 VM. Sorry, I had to remember where that dropdown was. I jumped into IIS2, which right now is not part of an availability set. And I'm going to add it into that web farm AV set, right? And so it's going to put it in the same AV set as IIS1. That's going to take a little bit of time here. Notice it's up here letting me know an update is in progress. You can change the configuration settings after it finishes, etc. What was that? Okay. And I might ought to have started that earlier. Okay. I'll tell you what, while that runs, I'll use this time and go show you making a web roll inside a cloud service. Okay. So these were specifically made VMs. You saw me earlier going and provision a Windows Server 2012 R2 VM. All I did is install IIS and add my web content to it, right? And then imaged it. I showed you how I did that, and then basically set up multiple instances of that image. Well, with the web roll, I'm going to go spin up yet one more copy of Studio here. I'm going to go into File, New, Project. And instead of a web application directly, I'm going to first make a cloud project. And you'll notice I've got this Windows Azure Cloud Service. I've already used the term cloud service, and I said it's this protective boundary around one or more VMs. This is the same cloud service that we're talking about. But this project template helps you create those special kinds of VMs called web roles and worker roles. And those are pre-configured virtual machines that you don't have to set up, as opposed to the manual VMs that you go in and configure on your own, right? So this is going to help me build web roles and worker roles, right? So I'm just going to call this my web role, or how about cloud service demo? That works. And I'll go ahead and say OK. And it says, OK, well, a cloud service is just a boundary. It's useless unless you put something in it. What kind of workloads do you want to have running inside of this cloud service? And it says, well, we've got project templates that support websites running on web roles or various types of code running on worker roles. A web role is a pre-configured Windows Server box with IIS. A worker role is a pre-configured Windows box without IIS, right? So if you think about workloads that you would run on IIS, you put those into web roles. Workloads that you would run not on IIS, background processing or whatever, or maybe you want to run Apache, you could actually set up a script that installed Apache into a worker role and turned it into an Apache node instead of an IIS node or something like that, right? So these are configurable through startup scripts. You can install additional products as long as the product can be downloaded at startup time or deployed as part of your package and installed as the VM starts up. It'll run your startup scripts, provision whatever additional software or whatever else it is you need, and then deploy your code into that box, okay? But I'll pick an ASP.NET web role here. And again, this is creating a project, so I'll give it a name. Cloud Service Web Role. Nice creative name. And Visual Studio is going to come back and say, well, what kind of website do you want? And again, I'll do it MVC here just to keep it simple. So this project that it's creating is going to look exactly like any other ASP.NET MVC project in Visual Studio 2013, with a couple of exceptions. You'll notice that in the references, there are some references off to these Windows Azure assemblies out here. And that's going to let my MVC site be called by the Azure runtime at startup. It's also going to help my site know how to talk to the Azure runtime, like to get configuration settings or find out how many copies of itself there are running or what is its IP address or a whole bunch of other cool stuff. So it can get configuration, it can get settings, diagnostic information is another one there. So those assemblies automatically get referenced. And there's an extra class added called webroll.cs. And notice it inherits from this base class, role entry point. Right, and a role entry point basically is this base class that the runtime knows how to call into. So going to deploy my project and say, hey, roll entry point, I'm starting you. Is there anything you want to run on start? And if so, here's your chance to run that code. This is any code you want to run when your site's starting, right? I similarly have a on run, or just a run method, and that when the runtime says, okay, run, it'll call that method for me. And if there's anything I want to do, I would do it here. In a worker role, run's the whole point. You write your code and run. In a web role, we don't need it because IIS is already going to run your site for you. Okay, so we don't need run in a web role. You let run is life in a worker role. And then there's also an on stop. Hey, I'm shutting you down. If there's any cleanup code, here's your chance. Go run it. Right, and so you can provide overrides for those. The default just works as is, so that's all good to go. And if you look at the cloud service, then there's really just a bunch of XML files. There's one type of file called service configuration, and there's a configuration file for what does it use when it's running locally on the compute emulator versus what settings do you want to have when it's actually running in the cloud. So that's the difference between the .local and the .cloud version of those. They're the exact same thing, it's just one gets used locally, the other one gets used in the cloud. The third one is this service definition. And this actually sets up what are the roles, what are their endpoints. This is more infrastructure. How does the Azure Data Center need to set up your cloud service? What roles are there? How many instances of each? How do they communicate with the outside world? All that good stuff. The service definition is part of the package that you deploy, and you can't change it without redeploying. Okay? So like you can't add a new role to the cloud service without redeploying the package. Okay? Configuration though is out of the package and you can change that on the fly. So things like connection strings, you no longer put in web config. You put them up there into the service configuration so you can change them on the fly without having to redeploy as you go there. But anyhow, as I debug this, just like you could debug a website locally, you can debug your cloud services locally. And there's a compute emulator that gets installed with the Azure SDK and the tools for Visual Studio. And this will spin up the compute emulator. There's also a storage emulator that emulates tables and blobs and queues that you can use locally. So you can actually do a lot of learning about Azure development with the platform as a service model just using the local tools without even having an actual Azure account. But it'll run it down here locally for me. And while that's happening, you'll notice that I get this compute emulator user interface. I can go see it. And I've got one web role that has a single instance. And this is the trace diagnostics log that I can view for that one instance. If I go back over here, the site should run eventually. There it is. And just like normal in Visual Studio, if you close down IE when you're debugging, it'll shut down. And you'll notice this instance get destroyed. And it'll pull it out. Eventually, there it goes, okay, and it's gone. Now, let me jump back up to my configuration, though. And I was talking about these XML files. You can edit the XML directly, but this roles node gives you a nice visual editor for editing the configuration for your node. And I'll come in here and say, you know what? I don't want two instances, or one instance, I want two instances of that. That's how easy it is to scale with platform as a service. I didn't have to go make another VM with the same image, add it to the availability set, you know, figure out how to do web deploy to synchronize the code across them. I just said, give me two instances, right? And it'll make that happen. So simply changing that, when I come back and debug again and look at my compute emulator, notice that now I've got two instances of my web role in there. Instance 0 and instance 1. Pretty cool? And that's basically two copies of my website now running. Now if I turned around and deployed this, I could push it right up into Azure. And I'm not going to go full process through that just because it's going to take a little bit too long here. But I can right click on this and say publish, just like I did with my website. But this time it's going to help me deploy into a cloud service. And it'll help me go pick a cloud service that I want to deploy into, help me spin it up, et cetera there, and just push this right up into Azure for me. Really cool, right? Once it's running in Azure, I could grab that web role node slider and say, give me 5 instances, or back down to 2, or give me 3, or whatever. And it's simply moving a slider left to right to change the scaling on that. Very, very cool. All right, so let me cancel back here, see if my affinity set happened here. It should have. There's our cloud services. I should have those two guys now running in an affinity set, and with that, yeah, so there's two extra small instances running in that now. So let's do one little test here, web farm demo. Hopefully I can get this done here. Notice IIS1 is answering that. Let's see if we can get IIS2 to hit it. You guys, if you have web access, you could actually hit that as well. Webfarmdemo.cloudapp.net. That's still not moving off it. Let me go spin up a fresh copy here. Come on, IIS2. All right. Demo gods are not agreeing with me right now, but if you hit that enough time, basically there's a load balancer built in that's just looking at a combination of source IP, destination, or source IP, source port, destination IP, destination port, and the protocol. Right, and just looping, or if any of those changes, well, IE should be changing its source port on the different hard refreshes and eventually get the load balancer to move me onto a different node in there. So if you hit refresh, well, when I demo this, I can usually get it to happen within 5 or 10 tries. Right now, of course, it's just not wanting to agree with me. So, but if anybody else hits it, you may see IIS2 pop up there. So if not, it could be that my web farm hasn't quiesced yet, so. But anyhow, hopefully that gives you a number of different ideas. I ran through a bunch of demos there. Timing-wise, kind of meant I interweaved them there, but we saw deploying websites with source control integration using continuous deployment with Visual Studio Online. That was really cool. You can go from Visual Studio straight into a website. So I didn't have to go through source control. And that doesn't mean that you couldn't have been in source control and deployed straight. Right, it's just different pathways you get it there. We looked at web farms, building them off of virtual machines with pre-built images and availability sets, as well as web roles inside cloud services and pushing them up there. And again, that could all been done through web deploy and source control integration as well. There's actually, and I know I have a little bit of time here at the end, I'm gonna use it to show you one other cool thing. This is brand new here. Let me get back up into the management portal here to my websites. And we saw that ad hoc site. Oh, sorry. Didn't mean to come in here onto the actual management of it. And on the configure tab, oh, it's not gonna let me do it on this account. Okay, well, I can't do it live then. But, sorry, that's remote debugging, that's something else. Oh, I'm not seeing it. Okay, it's probably me scrolling past it too fast. We have a new feature in Visual Studio Online where there's actually a browser editor, code editor, which is really only good for your HTML5.js. It's not gonna be a way to go in and write C#.NET code and that kind of stuff. It's called Monaco. There's a switch that you can flip in there that'll basically edit the in-browser editing of the site, and I imagine I'm just scrolling past it too fast there. But there's demos of it if you go look at Channel 9, the Visual Studio 2013 launch sample demo of walking through that. The one other thing that's kind of cool, and I'll just show you where it's at, but I won't walk through it, inside Visual Studio, if you think of like that site that I deployed directly, I can actually come down to the site. Let's refresh here. And you can right-click on that and actually attach your debugger directly to it. Now that's happening securely, because remember I authenticated against my Azure account with my Microsoft account. So it wouldn't let me do that if I didn't have permissions to be able to get in there. The only other thing is that when I deployed, I would have wanted to deploy as debug, so that the debug symbols were there and it could sync up to it and all that kind of stuff. But you can actually have it running for real in Azure and do step-through debugging down inside Visual Studio as well. So that's very, very cool. All right. Sorry, I I keep wanting to pack more and more in here. So hopefully, though, that gives you a lot of great ideas about sort of Visual Studio, TFS Online, Visual Studio, or sorry, Azure. How we can sort of use those all together to sort of enrich our dev and test experiences out there. So there is a hands-on lab for this as well. So even if you're watching over the stream, you can download the labs and go through them on your own. They're fully documented for you. If you follow the labs as they're written, they all work off the VM that you build in the very first one. So even if you're on a Mac or something else, you can still go through those labs. Okay. And in fact, I should mention, I'll put it up here. If you are watching remotely, Notepad, BS Labs, that's the URL for those. It'll get you the latest version. That's also a copy of my slides and the latest version of the lab files and all that good stuff as well. So again, it's BS, not Brett Statham, or they're good labs. Okay, so. All right, and with that, I'll wrap it up. Again, thank you very much for your time. Hopefully you got a lot of good information, and go try Visual Studio and Azure.
Brett?
Yeah.
We did have one question that I wanted to ask that came in from the online audience, if we could. The question is there an Azure best practice matrix somewhere that says something like, I want to do X, so set up A, B, and C in the portal. I want to do Y, so set up D, E, and F in the portal, and so on.
I wouldn't say there's a matrix in that sense. There is the Windows Azure Training Kit that has a lot of different scenarios. Walking you through setting up virtual networks, setting up VMs for deployment, load testing, just good old cloud services, websites, whatever there. And those would walk you step by step. Here's how you go about getting those things done. But a clear matrix of here's what I want to do and here's the way you go about doing it, that would be a pretty big matrix. So, yeah, I'm not aware of one, no.
Okay, thank you. That was the only one we wanted to ask. Were there any closing comments you wanted to make before we wrap up the stream?
Other than get out and use it. Remember, you got free trials. There's also trial editions of Visual Studio and Visual Studio Express that you can use as well. So go try it out. Love it.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, everyone, that does conclude the webcast today. Thank you for joining us, and have a great day. Be sure to check out the free Windows Azure trial download below the video window there. You can find other helpful resources below. Thank you.